Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talks Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. My guest today is Diane Dirks. She's a sustainable organic gardener with over 45 years of experience. She's been on the show before, and as we've been talking about growing your own food over the months, we're now at the end of summer, and it's really starting to feel like the end of summer to me. Today is August 21st, 2014. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida. It's kind of overcast, but the days are getting shorter. Each day is getting shorter. I can see the different patterns in the sun, and this is the time of year when we're starting to look at the harvest in the garden. That coming up in September, we're going to start having harvest festivals, and the all the plants are kind of winding down and bringing their energies inward, creating seeds instead of creating fruits. And it's time for all the nutrition and the energy and the life force of the plant to come together in the seeds that carry on the new plants that come then in the following spring. So today, Diane and I are going to talk about saving seeds, how you can grow food in your own garden and then save the seeds from year to year and continue to grow that food. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Deborah. Good talking with you again.
Thank you. I always love talking to you. Diane and I are actually friends if you all haven't figured that out. She's more than a guest. So Diane, tell us what's happening in our food system now and why is it important for individuals to be paying attention to this?
Well, food is actually in a crisis state, although the only way you can really tell that is because food prices keep going up. And what's happening is areas where we have been getting food, our food bread baskets, if you will, especially in California and Texas and even South America places, they're experiencing drought. Some of it's been caused by the redirection of water resources out of the area for political reasons, but also just because we are experiencing an alteration in which is cyclic, by the way. Everybody says, oh, it's global warming. It's a natural cyclical thing. But we are experiencing climate change, and we're also having a lesser and lesser biodiversity. In other words, if you go to a farmer and you say, what are you growing? He'll say, well, I have about five choices. Whereas 200 years ago, if he were saving his seeds, he would have maybe 300 or 400 choices of what he could grow, depending on where he could find people to sell him seeds or his neighbors would share with him or whatever, because seed saving and seed swapping were part of our culture for a very long time. So we're getting crop failures because of drought and also just because of other factors. We're losing our farmland through erosion and contamination from the farming practices, especially when you use big equipment. It just causes a lot of loss of the soil, and it also contaminates it so much that after a while you can't grow anything. And we're losing millions of acres of farmable land every year from this. Also, the cost of fuel is increasing, and it's causing the whole agricultural industry to have losses. And then, of course, when you have to bring your food from California or Guatemala or wherever, and it's long transportation, the nutrients fade away, especially vitamin C. And some of our food is warehoused for months. They close off these big warehouses, fill them with CO2, and then cold storage them. And they look fine, but they're just losing their nutrients because these are living things. So then we have also what's happening with our food is the loss of diversity in the varieties grown, as I said before. That has been a real problem because we're experiencing a very heavy control factor in the seed companies. Particularly through Cargill and Monsanto, they're they're only offering certain seeds, and it's getting harder and harder for the big farmer to get diverse varieties of seeds. And in places like Iowa, it's actually illegal for people to save their own seeds. They can go to jail. This is don't even get me started on that one. But here's a problem with what's happening with our food. When food loses its nutritional value because the soil is depleted and it's full of chemicals, our health suffers, and then our sense of well-being and our energy levels fall. And, you know, you look around you and you see people and they're just dragging their butts, you know, they're just always tired and everything else. That's because what they're eating isn't supplying what they need.
Yes.
So we're in a crisis right now. And
we are.
It's something we need to confront, you know, because the alternative is that we're just going to keep going downhill. And that, to me, is that's unacceptable.
Well, not only is it unacceptable, it's unnecessary, because there are things that each one of us can do individually that we can do together with others in our communities. I know that when I used to live in California, I was born and raised in California, and so I was accustomed to, from the time I was a child, I remember that my family, even though they weren't farmers or gardeners particularly, my father always planted tomato plants every summer, and we had cucumbers and peppers and things that could grow really easily in our backyard. And so I grew up with that, and when I had my own home, and I lived in the last place I lived before I moved here to Florida, I lived in a little village out in a rural area just north of San Francisco. And I knew a lot of my neighbors, and we all had plenty of land and fertile soil being in a forest. And everybody was always exchanging seeds and, you know, raspberry canes. And we really were creating varieties that were very suited to our very little local valley where we lived. And a lot of us gardened. We shared with each other. And... And that's the way, when I think, if you think back in history, that's the way people always did it, that they, that the plants grew, that they harvested, that they saved seeds, they planted them again, and they shared with each other. And there was no such thing as having to buy your seed or having corporate control. That life is about, I mean, we're part of the whole scheme of life, and part of that is growing our food. And the way you grow
exactly.
food is with seeds. excuse me. So what can individuals do? How does saving seeds help save our food supply?
Well, it bypasses the corporate system to save your seeds.
Yes.
And to share them, because the corporate system right now is all about profit and control. They do not care about your health. In fact, they're oftentimes the same people that are on the boards of directors of the big seed companies. They're also boards of directors in the big pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, they don't want well people because that cuts their profit. So we're not going to get any help from that quarter. And if we want to survive this insanity, we have to be very self-sufficient, and we have to take responsibility for our own what we eat, and that means having a garden. And of course, I don't think if you live in a subdivision or something, you're going to be able to grow all of your own food, because there's just not enough space. I mean, I have 0.7 acres and I have 90 garden beds, and I still can't grow everything I need. But I eat a lot of really good food,
yes.
And I share it, too. but one of the things that I tell people is you have to rethink your priorities. If you understand what's happening with your food, if you understand when you go in the grocery store, anything that's in the middle aisles has got GMOs in it, genetically modified mm-hmm. organisms. In other words, they're sprayed with toxic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, Roundup, which is... The technical research has been done recently is saying that it's cancer-causing and all kinds of stuff. And this isn't me saying this. This is research. Anybody can do a Google search and pull it up on the internet. It's everywhere. And so
yes.
you're eating things that are actually mutating your gut flora and your insides. It's messing up kids. Their little bodies aren't fully formed, and so they're not able to process the stuff. So we're seeing rises in autism and all kinds of stuff.
Diane, we need to go to break. We need to go to break because the commercial is going to start playing. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. My guest today is Diane Dirks. And when we come back, we'll talk more about seed saving. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. And my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's been a sustainable organic gardener for more than 45 years. She started when she was minus 10.
Good one. You're hired.
Anyway, I want to just talk about seeds for a minute. Seeds are so amazing, whether we're planting them or whether we're eating them, like chia seeds or sesame seeds or whatever. It really has all that nutrition from the plant is in the seed. And it's there protected, waiting for the right conditions to occur in the spring to carry on the life of that plant. Seeds are really amazing things. It's I'm awestruck by seeds. But Diane, would you tell us, now there's different kinds of seeds. I mean, if you go to, say, the nursery and you buy some seeds and you buy a hybrid seed, for example, explain to us how a plant and a fruit, vegetable, whatever, grown from a hybrid seed is different from buying and planting and growing heirloom and open pollinated seeds.
Okay, well, first of all, I want to say that seeds are some of my favorite friends.
Mine too.
I love that process.
I love that process of putting the little seed in the little peat pot and watching it grow into a plant. It just amazes me every time.
Me too. That's been my experience since I was 3 years old when my mother gave me my first little garden. And the love affair has never gone away. I just get happy walking outside and looking at my garden. And anyway, yeah. To answer your question, when you are picking what you want to grow, you are looking for certain attributes. And if you are trying to get more, and you're a seed grower, you might try to put a couple of different kinds of parents together to get the attributes you want. And that works for the first generation only. After that, and that's called a hybrid, mm-hmm. After that, you don't have any control over which direction the next generation will play. And so you can't put it in the ground and expect it to produce the same food. In fact, oftentimes you get very weird, mutated-looking critters, and they're really not what you want. You're not getting the good qualities that you wanted, which you would have the first generation of those hybrid seeds. So, and it's really, if you're trying to be self-sustaining and see into the future with what you're growing, then the only kind of seed that you really should grow are the ones that started off. They're the originals, you know. Those are the heirloom inherited seeds. And oftentimes you'll have a type of food growing, you know, maybe a tomato or a cucumber or something. And that might have been producing the same quality food in the garden for maybe 500 years, and it never changed. But if you put a hybrid in the ground, you'll get one generation of pretty good stuff. It will be edible and everything else. But you can't put it in the ground next year, save the seed and put it in the ground next year, because it will not get what you want. And I don't even bother planting anything that's not heirloom.
Yeah, I don't either. I only plant heirloom seeds because, I mean, for hybrid seeds, that's part of our industrial consumer society. I mean, if you're thinking like a corporation and a consumer and you want to have consumers buy things, then of course what you're going to do is you're going to produce a seed that requires a consumer to buy it again next year. But that's not the way nature works. The way nature works is that nature provides the seed so that you can collect it or if you didn't collect it, I have had experiences where like I didn't bring in all my tomatoes, you know, so I've got tomatoes falling off the vine and decomposing on the ground. And the next year I've got 100 tomato plants where the old tomato was. That's the way nature works. It doesn't require you to go buy anything. And so,
it's self-seeding.
It is self-seeding. And so all you're doing with collecting seeds is that you're just collecting them and controlling where they go next year. Because the
and
plant
making
would just,
sure that you get them next year.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
All self-seed. You might not have exactly the right conditions the next year. And it won't necessarily come back the following year if it doesn't have the right conditions. But if you are foresighted enough to keep some of those seeds, you at least know you have some security that if you have the potential of growing them
right.
again.
Right. So are all types of food plants grown with seeds?
No. Most perennials, like asparagus or you could just think of some of the vegetables that aren't grown in new crops every year. They're usually, divide the roots or they take cuttings and they clone them. Or they just get big enough you can split them. Well, yeah, that's you're dividing it that way.
I can think of things like strawberries have shoots. They have these little runners that go out and make another plant. So if you were to just leave a strawberry plant, eventually you'd have a lot of strawberry plants. And mint does that. Mint grows, I think, by roots. It sends out its roots and then it spreads very easily. And like sweet potatoes, a lot of people grow sweet potatoes around here in the South. And they have little eyes on them. And so you just cut them up and put them in the ground and the eyes grow into plants. So it's not all seeds.
That's right. Tubers especially especially true of potatoes and sweet potatoes and some of the other, like Drusillum artichoke is another tuber, also called sunchoke. And they reproduce by tuber, you know, the
right.
root. But most of the things that you think of as garden plants are seeded, you know, that they do grow by seed.
Tomatoes and peppers and eggplants and watermelons and pumpkins, cucumbers. I grow cucumbers in my yard.
That's right. And
beans.
Like, beans, yes, that's right. Also, all your brassicas, that's a technical term for all the kohl family, all the cabbages. You know, they shoot out seed pods and you catch those. And when you're in a garden and near the end of the summer, when you see your plant shooting up a tall stalk with a flower on the end, you can tell that's, you know, you're going to be able to save that, and it's going to turn into be able to save it.
Good. Well, when we come back from the break, we'll talk more about how you can actually collect your seeds. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. We're talking about saving seeds in your garden, open pollinated heirloom quality seeds. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's a sustainable organic gardener. She's been doing this for more than 45 years, and she has a place that where she's growing. She's got 90 garden beds. She's growing a lot of food. She really knows what she's doing. And her website is the Garden Lady of GA, like Georgia, the GA. The Garden Lady of GA.wordpress.com. And she has a lot of things there. You can see pictures and things. And you can also go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and look at the description for today's show, and you'll see links to all the other shows that she's done with other talking about different issues having to do with gardening. So I'm ready to save my seeds. What do I do?
Okay, well, first of all, I just want to say that there's no way in this 40 minutes of actual talking that we can cover every subject. So I'm just going to give you a reference to a great book on this subject that you can get on Amazon.com. It's called Seed to Seed - Seed Saving by Ashworth. And that's the best one. So if you miss something, or you want to have more information, you buy the book, because then you'll have the reference. You can go back to it all the time.
So, good, and I'll put that on ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com on your show description today so that people can have that.
That's good, because it's a huge subject, really.
It is.
And so basically, we were going to talk about how to save seeds, and I can break it down into basically three different kinds of seeds. You have dry ones, you have wet ones, and you have ones that come off of flowers. And I'll give you some examples. The wet ones would include tomatoes, eggplant, melons, squash, pumpkins, and cucumbers. And the dry ones are usually in pods, like beans and peas, or they're not enveloped closely, like peppers. And then mm-hmm. the flowering ones are lettuces, carrots, and radishes. There's others, too. But if you get the book, you'll be able to check whichever one. So what I tell people to do, if they're going to save their seeds, is they look over your plants and pick the juiciest, nicest ones, the ones that taste the best, the ones that you really want to see go into the future. If they're looking kind of rotten, or with the exception of eggplant, which have to be rotten, kind of brown and rotten for you to save the seeds. I know that sounds gross, but anyway, it's true. So maybe you have a particularly juicy tomato that's really knocked your socks off. Well, you're definitely going to want to save that one. But if it's kind of, not that tasty, or, it split every time it started to rain, it split, or you had other problems with it, we do have some leeway. I mean, you only have so much growing space, so you have to pick pretty carefully what you want to put into the future. So you pick the ones you want, and go ahead.
I'd just like to add something here that came to mind while you were talking about that, and that is Luther Burbank. And I'm not sure that everybody knows who Luther Burbank is, but I grew up in California, and Luther Burbank is just every school child gets taught about Luther Burbank in California. And what Luther Burbank did is that he developed a lot of the varieties that we have now, like russet potatoes, I think, and Shasta daisies and things like that. But he didn't do it by genetically modified organisms, and he didn't do it by making hybrids. He did it by selecting strains. Like he would grow a whole bunch of plants, and he'd taste them just like you were talking about, and he would say, this is a good one. This makes a strong plant. This tastes good. And then he'd save those seeds and plant them again and plant them again and plant them again. And it's really fascinating. I love the story of Luther Burbank. I just totally love it. And it just shows what a thoughtful gardener can do.
That's right. Well, we have at our disposal actually clubs and sites such as Seed Savers Exchange, where mm-hmm. you can go onto the website and pick ones that have already been saved and salvaged, actually, and buy those seeds and start your own heirloom production. You know, save them year after year.
Yes.
I oftentimes will save my own seeds and share them, or even sometimes I'll sell them, but I'm not a seed company. It's just a lot of work to make to give it right. its beginning. But I will say that it's important that if you're gonna give your garden the space in your garden to grow something, make a commitment to that plant. You know, say, okay, baby, I'm going to keep growing you, because you think about it. You may be the only person within 100 miles that's growing that particular plant.
Yes.
And if something happens, and we're suddenly we don't have the great transportation systems we have and that sort of thing, you may be the only source of that plant. So I really make a commitment to my plants, and I try to put them in the ground at least every third year, because they last about 3 years in the refrigerator. You want to keep them in the refrigerator once you save them. Some say put it in the freezer, and I was told that, but then I did enough research and I realized that they probably in nature, sometimes they'll make it and sometimes they won't. So if you just keep growing them every year, allocate a little space in your garden for that particular plant and, basically adopt it under your wing, then that plant will go into the future.
And when we have so many, you know, as we were talking about the hybrid seeds before, we really are, our whole entire food supply is based on a handful of seed types that are hybrids. And all of these natural seeds need to be saved. They need to be saved because all the varieties need to be saved. And the people that are going to save them are backyard gardeners, not the multinational corporations. And so we really are. Sure. You can tell me. You have 1 minute. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, in Russia, in St. Petersburg, during the Russian Revolution, the Tsar of Russia had allocated this huge building as a seed saving place, and he had literally gone around the world and found these seeds. And then people were starving in the streets, and the people that were manning that valued those seeds so much, they were starving rather than eat those seeds so that we would have them into the future. So, you know, it's a pretty big deal.
It is, and I think that it's something that most people don't think about. I know that I grew up in an industrial consumer environment where it wasn't about us making or growing anything. It was about, well, we'll just go to the store and buy something, you know? And yet, behind the store, I mean, people think that the store is their source of supply. But behind the store, I know, we're laughing. But I remember when I used to think that. I remember when I first learned, oh, there's something else besides the store. And so I wanted to say something, but I'll wait till we come back after the break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm here today with Diane Dirks, and we're having fun talking about seeds. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Diane Dirks, and we're talking about saving seeds. What I wanted to say before the break is we were talking about how in our industrial consumer society that we think about going to the store to get something, and yet what's in the store is very limited. If we go to the supermarket or even a natural food store, that those varieties are limited to oftentimes hybrids, varieties, especially in supermarkets. It's just, you know, a couple different varieties of tomatoes. And yet there's, how many varieties of tomatoes do you think there are, heirloom tomatoes? Hundreds.
Thousands,
yes.
Because they're regional, you know.
Yeah, that's
right.
You
have these
different
conditions in different places, and people have developed them over the years so that they know that they're going to have a good crop every year. What you find in the grocery store, we've been kind of hard on the poor farmer. He's basically trying to make a living. And one of the things that he has to do is he has to ensure that each crop is perfect and that the exact things that make people want to buy them are part of that process.
That's right. That's right.
And so he has a market to supply, and we're very unforgiving. We throw out millions of tons of food every year because it has a little dimple in it or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's trying to move to what we'll sell because he has to feed his family. But usually they're the things that make a hybrid good for the farmer is not what makes it flavorful or nutritious or really, you know, have many other attributes
like being able to save the seed.
Well, right. But also, oftentimes, you'll have, like tomatoes, you'll have a kind of tomato that it all comes ripe at the same time. Okay? That is makes it possible for the pickers to come in there and get it. If that's called a determinate kind of tomato. You'll see if you're going to the nursery in the spring and picking some out to put in your garden, you'll see determinate. It means a whole bunch of them come ripe at the same time. If you want to eat your tomatoes on the table and have a supply all summer, you don't want a determinate. You want an indeterminate.
Right. That's
and
right.
But you're not going to find indeterminate varieties in the grocery store, because if they had to wait all summer to pick those tomatoes, you know, coming off the vine maybe two or three at a time, they couldn't make a living.
So there's a whole different kind of seed and a whole different kind of growing mentality from if you're being a commercial farmer and having to put your food into the commercial system versus if you're growing it for your own use. You want, that's as right. You said, you want to have those tomatoes ripening a few every day. You want to have your chickens laying a few eggs every day. And then you always have this fresh food. But you can never get this in the supermarket because the supermarket is it has a completely different purpose. And that it, right. You know, we may be happy that, like, I know I'm happy that I can just go to the store and buy food. You know, if I can't grow my crop in my backyard, well, I can always go to the store. Or I can always go to the farmer's market. But I'm getting to this point where I want to know how to grow my own food, that I'm looking at how can I actually, in a practical way, do that, even if I don't grow all of it, because I want to have the nutrition and the delight of eating these real natural varieties and the ones that grow here that align with my body in this place. And that comes from all the things that we've been talking about today, about preserving the diversity of your place where you live, saving the seeds, growing the plants, taking responsibility for food. The point I wanted to make about the supermarket is that, you know, we think that the supermarket is the source of supply, but actually all the food is coming from nature. It's all coming from someplace else. We only see the supermarket. But think about it. Just think beyond the supermarket. Where is that food coming from? And it could come from your own backyard. If you don't have a backyard, maybe there you have a neighbor that would like some help in their garden.
Well, you're absolutely right. We talked about that earlier, you and I, off the radio. And I know people that do little co-ops where somebody has space in their garden and somebody, you know, doesn't, but they're willing to work. At least you know what you're eating. See, that's the thing.
Yes.
They've been fighting, the grocery store management companies have been fighting this whole thing about labeling so that you really don't know what's in your food. And if you grow it yourself, you know what's in the soil, you know what kind of nutrients are in it, you know it hasn't been sprayed with anything. You know, it's like if it didn't make it that year, if a crop didn't make it, you're going to find out why. It may be there's toxins in it. You know, it's like you have some control over your food, and you also have control if, God forbid, we have a problem with the economy or something, you know that you're still going to be able to go out there and get something out of your garden and eat.
Right.
You're going to feed your kids.
Right. And I think that in today's world, I'm always thinking about how do we be prepared for that. I mean, I don't have a doomsday scenario in my mind because I think that there's all kinds of things that we can be doing to make that not happen in advance. That doesn't have to be our future. But at the same time, regardless of that, I think the best quality food is food that comes from your own backyard or comes from a local community garden or comes from your local farmer through a community-supported agriculture program. And that those are things that we can have control over ourselves, that we can be put our own standards on it, that we can feed. Like one of the things that I'm doing right now is I do have some raised beds that I'm not growing anything in right now. But, you know, every day I take my kitchen scraps out there and build soil and build soil and build soil. And I know when I finally plant some plants in there, I'm going to know exactly what's in that soil. I put minerals on the soil. You know, I have lots of earthworms in my soil. Those are going to be really healthy plants and I'll know it. And that'll be the food that I'm eating. And
also there's joy in it.
Yes, there is. And I mean, there's just nothing like the taste and nutrition of having food right off the plant.
It's so fresh. You got all the nutrients in there. You know, it isn't sitting in a warehouse for 6 weeks or something, you know. So the taste is marvelous. I do a lot of tours. What I have here is a demonstration garden, and with 90 beds, it's all different techniques because I'm trying to inspire people. And I go around and I say, here, taste this. Here, put your mouth on this one.
Yeah.
And I get the most funny expressions on people. I didn't know carrots tasted like that.
Yeah. I know. I know. It really, it can be shocking when you eat real food for the first time.
I know, and you don't have to eat as much either because The nutrients are there. You know, kids eat and eat and eat because they're hungry, because their bodies aren't getting what they need.
Yeah.
And so if you're growing your own food and you're picking it and you're bringing it right into the house and you're you know, cooking it or making a salad out of it immediately, there is no loss of vitamin C. You know, you're getting everything in there and you don't have to eat as much because you're satisfied faster.
That's exactly
all that nutrient value.
Exactly right. I mean, that's where all the nutrients are. So any further tips you want to give us about saving seeds?
I'd say make a list of the things that you want to grow every year, and then go into the internet and do a little searching and find out the best way to grow that and what it needs, and even the different types of seeds require a different type of saving. You know, that they have different techniques for saving them.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy the book, I don't have any interest in that book personally or economically or anything, but I tell my students, buy the book, because then you can just reach for it. And, you know, if we lose power or something, you're still going to be able to get the answers. And then just grow what you want to eat the next year. I know it sounds silly. It's almost redundant to say that. But I know people that are like me. I'm a total foodie and a total loving of seeds and plants and stuff. And I grow stuff, and then later I go, why did I plant that? I'll never eat that. But I thought it looked so cool in the catalog. But I have lots of garden bed space, and garden space is your limiting factor. So pick what you want to grow and what you want to eat. And then find out, go into the internet and find out what's there, because that's what I do. I spend a lot of time just researching so I don't make mistakes. So I make the most of my garden space, because I too am from California, and we had two seasons, not four. So
yeah.
I had to learn how to garden all over again, even though I've been a gardener for a really long time. So also, if you're going to plant something to save the seeds commercially, you need to just leave a lot of space between the plants, because they will cross-pollinate and they'll naturally hybridize. Now, in other words, nature also makes hybrids. So if you have a hot pepper and you have a sweet pepper, don't grow them in the same bed. Plant them at opposite ends of the garden.
Good advice,
Don't try to save a sickly plant, only the good ones. And if you're going to save tubers like Jerusalem artichokes or sweet potatoes or something, get some slightly damp sand and put it in a cool, dark place so that next season it will stay good. You can't just put it in a bag and forget about it, because they will die.
Diane, I have to interrupt you, sorry, again, because we're coming right up to the end of the show. Thank you so much for being here. Her website is thegardenladyofga.wordpress.com. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn. Dad, be well.